into the right field corner. Gone. A laser beam home run to right for Kyle Isbell, who has homered in back-to-back games. And the Royals get the run right back.
And the Royals, the boys in blue, win. Yes, they win 2-1. Break up the Royals as they salvage final game of the three-game series. Kyle Isbell with a home run in back-to-back games. Didn't have one in his first 66 big league games, or last 66 games. Now two in the last two games. He had the game-winning homer, it turned out, in the fifth. And Zach Greinke gets a second straight win. It was his 500th career start for Zach. And he was asked after the game about that number. He goes, that kind of seems like a cool number to me. That's Zach. He says numbers don't usually get him going, but he thought that was kind of a cool one. 500 career start. A lot of these guys, like Kyle Isbell, were in diapers, close to diapers, when Zach was starting his career. So pretty good stuff as Greinke gets the win. Six innings, allowed just one run on four hits. He's 2-4 on the season. Here's Matheny on Zach Greinke's performance in the 2-1 victory, and Barlow getting the save in the ninth.
Trying to get your head around 500 starts, that's just, it's amazing. And you're just not going to see many people moving forward that are going to be able to do something like that and to do it as well as he's done. And then to go out against a very good offense that's given him trouble in the past and put up that kind of start. You know, I thought the first inning was pretty indicative of who Zach Greinke is, right? There's a misplay in left field that's typically made. Great hustle by Isbell, by the way, being there so that run doesn't score. And he just started making better pitches and knew when to stretch the zone, knew how to take advantage of aggressiveness, and puts up a zero right there and gives us a chance. And just all day long, really in control of what he wanted to do, and it was impressive.
It was. The Royals are now 27-47. They have today off before starting a three-game series in Detroit tomorrow night at 6:10. Time for a Cubs update with Jason Broadfoot.
It's brought to you by the Palmer House, which at one time was the largest motel in the country. It's hosted very many sitting U.S. presidents since, most of the U.S. presidents since Ulysses S. Grant.
They weren't standing, they were sitting?
Yeah.
That's what I make sure.
Yeah. Probably laying down at one point.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, that's true. But, good point.
But, yeah, the Cubs did get, I can't remember the score, 8-3. They got some revenge over the Reds.
Ooh, they won.
8-3. Yes.
Awesome.
So
good news. Cubs fans. Royals and Cubs win on the same
it
day.
It doesn't happen very many days.
Break it up. Coming up, the newest College Hall of Fame class includes a former KU and former K-State coach. Also, a new commissioner for the Big 12 and NBA trade and free agency tonight, plus Wimbledon Dusty will give us our All England Club update, hopefully as a sponsor ready for that as well. I like how Jason's put this together with these sponsors. Every day I learn a new business or company.
I know.
I think Chicago, the city of Chicago, should send you a little bit of a cut.
Some of them are real. Some of them are fake.
Well, but, I'm okay with fake. Yeah. Hey, I mean, you know, anymore nowadays, nobody apparently knows the difference between what is fake and what isn't.
That's
so why
true.
Not?
That's true.
Let's just keep it rolling. So yesterday we talked about a guy, a French hurdler, that was assaulted 20 minutes before his race. He ended up getting punched in the face by somebody who got by security, if you didn't hear the story, and was coughing up blood minutes before he ran the race. He had to have a patch over his eye. He was bleeding, and so he was running the race with one eye, basically. And not only did he run the race and regathered himself, he won the race. He ran it, he won it, and it was a career best time. And we talked about taking a bad story, turning it into something positive, and we also said that many times in sports, the word courage is overused when it comes to you listen to play-by-play, whether it's on the radio or TV, talking about, oh, this player, oh, what guts to how much courage it is to go in against a seven-footer and get your shot blocked. Wow, it takes great courage, doesn't it? Great courage to, you know, you turned your ankle and you're still gutting it out. Well, that's unbelievable courage. I think courage should be reserved for, you know, firefighters that ran into the buildings on 9/11. I think courage should be left and reserved for really not athletes for the most part, but should be reserved for you know, police officers that put their lives on the line. I think courage should be reserved for people that fight for a country and go into a hornet's nest of situations and have given their ultimate sacrifice, their lives. There are many, many, many better examples of courage than an athlete playing on a sprained ankle or maybe even a guy that runs a race after being assaulted. Or at least that would be closer to it. But I'll give you one that absolutely And this is one of the few athletic stories that I think the word courage fits. And it's not really an athletic story because it's a real life story, but it involves and involved a very prominent athlete. Now, when this happened, I was 7, so I don't remember it. It would have been 39 years ago yesterday. And for you young people out there, I want you to pay very close attention. And you may or may not be aware of this. And if you're an older person, maybe Dusty's age, Jason's age, my age, or older, and I would really love to say that many other people would take note of this, politicians and other people that are very selfish. I'm not saying all politicians are selfish, but I'm saying many people in our society are selfish. And we hear about all these athletes. Kyrie Irving says, dare to be different. And then he takes $37 million. Dare to be different would be to take $6 million and play on a player's exemption and opt out with the Nets. Here's a guy dares to be different, and it cost him his life. And he had every reason not to do what he did. For those of you that aren't aware, 39 years ago yesterday, on June 29th of 1983, Chiefs running back Joe Delaney drowned, trying to save three boys. Let me go through the official story that was released by the, AP or the Kansas City Star back in 1983. Joe Delaney, a running back with the Kansas City Chiefs, who was one of the National Football League's top rookies in 1981, drowned today after jumping into a pond to rescue three boys who were floundering in the water, police said. Delaney was 24. Assistant Police Chief E.W. Smith said that one of the boys, Harry L. Holland Jr., 11, of Monroe, Louisiana, also had drowned. Lancer Perkins, also 11, was hospitalized in critical condition, and the third boy, not identified, made it safely to the bank of the pond. The drownings in a public park here occurred when the three youths were swimming in a water hole left by construction workers, according to Mr. Smith. And by the way, this happened in Louisiana, where Joe Delaney was from. Witnesses said Mr. Delaney, who was sitting alone nearby, hollered at the boys to be careful and not to wade too far into the water. Moments later, they said the boys stepped off into deep water and went under. Mr. Delaney, fully clothed, quickly jumped into the pond. It is documented he was not a good swimmer, and he knew that. And yet, Mr. Delaney, still fully clothed, quickly jumped into the pond, witnesses said. And he tried to save boys he didn't even know. It wasn't his kids. Mr. Delaney's body was the last one recovered from the pond, which covers about 2 acres, said Eddie Cox, a photographer with Monroe News Star World. He added it took two police divers about 6 minutes to locate Mr. Delaney. A spokesman at St. Francis Medical Center said Mr. Delaney and Holland were being administered cardiopulmonary resuscitation when they arrived at the hospital's ER, but they never revived. Joe Delaney played 2 years in the National Football League with the Kansas City Chiefs. He rushed for 1,121 yards as a rookie, immediately becoming one of the bright young stars of the National Football League. He averaged 4.8 yards per carry. Due to injury, he appeared in 8 games during his second NFL season. In his 2 seasons with the Kansas City Chiefs, Joe Delaney set 4 franchise records that would stand for more than 20 years. He was a 2-time All-American athlete for the Northwestern State Demons football team, as well as a track and field star. He played 2 seasons with the Chiefs and was chosen as the AFC Rookie of the Year in 1981. Joe Delaney died on June 29, 1983, while attempting to rescue 3 children from drowning in a pond in Monroe, Louisiana. That's in northeastern Louisiana. He is posthumously awarded the Presidential Citizens Medal from U.S. President Ronald Reagan. While not officially retired, his jersey number while playing for the Chiefs, number 37, has never been worn since his death. Delaney was willing to sacrifice it all to save others he didn't even know. On that day, 39 years ago yesterday, a hero in every sense of the word. And folks, that is courage. That is courage. So this is why I can't stand hearing the word courage mentioned. I've never said it once in a broadcast that I recall ever in my life. And even if it crosses my mind, I make sure I don't say it. I can say it takes some guts, some gumption, but the word courage, it doesn't mean as much when it's overused. This is courage. This is a man And think about this today. Do you think, and granted, there's probably maybe somebody out there, but Kyrie Irving says dare to be different. All right, now, Joe Delaney didn't start that day thinking he was going to die and jump into a pond and save boys. But here's the thing. Joe Delaney had every reason not to jump in that pond. He had every reason imaginable, especially today's society, when we come with the athletes and all their money. I don't think, but I could be wrong, I don't think Kyrie Irving would have done the same thing. Now, I don't know that. I'm just saying I don't think he would have, but maybe he would have. Maybe he would have dared to be different and risked his life to save boys. Maybe. I don't know. I would like to think that all three of us would do that. We would jump into a pond and try to save some boys or try to get help. I will tell you, I am not a good swimmer. I can thrash. I last for a while, but I probably, if I jumped in and tried to save those boys, more than likely I would suffer the same fate as Joe Delaney. You hope you're never in that situation where you have to make that choice of, do I jump in and try to save kids or watch them drown? Joe Delaney did what he felt was right. He didn't have all day to think about it. He was not a good swimmer. He jumped in fully clothed. He didn't take his clothes off worrying about that or anything else. He saw people that he didn't even know, young boys that were 11 years old, and he knew they needed his help. He didn't worry about the money he was making. He didn't worry about his franchise records he had. He didn't worry about, the prime of his career or the beginning of an NFL career. He knew he was taking a big chance when he jumped in that pond, but he dared to be different. So Kyrie Irving, you can say dare to be different, and that's fine. If you want to say dare to be different in regards to I don't take a vaccine and I miss games, you're daring to be different. You were last year, and that's your right. You can do that. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But truly, when you look at the definition of courage and you want to talk about dare to be different, here's a man that was 24 in the prime of his career, a budding star that risked it all to save people he didn't even know. That's courage. That's a hero. And it happened 39 years ago yesterday. He also had a wife, Joe Delaney, and he had three children. He risked giving it up for people he didn't know and ended up dying, and his wife became a widow, and his kids ended up losing their father. It's an amazing story. It's a sad story. One kid did survive out of that. Mm-hmm. I don't know about the other one. I don't think he did. But,
no, he didn't.
But the one did. So he at least saved one life or helped save a life. But I guess the question you can say today, and it's an impossible question to answer, do we think some player in the prime of their career at any sport level or a politician or a very well-off individual or celebrity, would they do the same thing? There's no way to know for sure. You know, we don't even know. We think we know if we were in that situation. That mm-hmm. I think Dusty, Jason, I can only speak for myself. I like to think I would do it, but I don't know. I might chicken out, and then I have to live with that for the rest of my life. Of course, if I jump in and I die, I won't have anything to worry about the rest of my life either. But it's a very powerful story. And for young people out there that don't know anything about Joe Delaney, you need to look up his name on Google today or yesterday. And you need to understand that that's what courage is. And that's a hero. And stop telling me that a guy, even Michael Jordan, I mean, well, he what courage to play through the flu? Well, there's still debate whether it was the flu or food poisoning. Okay. I don't think that takes great courage. I think that takes some gumption. I think it takes, you're mentally strong. But I don't know if that takes courage. You weren't going to die. You know what I'm saying? Like, Michael Jordan played that game. He wasn't going to die because he played with the flu. Right. He wasn't going to kill anybody else, which would not tie into courage, by the way. But that was an amazing performance he did. Willis Reed coming back on an injured leg and everything, did that take great courage? I don't think it does. I think that's just strong-minded, strong-willed people that are competing. And I just think the word courage needs to be reserved for moments and stories like Joe Delaney's.
I don't think anybody means any ill will by it.
I know they don't, but it makes it less. It lessens the word when you overuse it.
Yeah. And in that walk of life, I guess, somewhat. But you're right. Then you hear the story like that, and then there's a whole nother level that you got to think about. I also kind of curious, like, that didn't happen in the social media age or the 24/7 cable news era or anything like that. Just how big of a story would that be today?
Oh, goodness gracious.
Right. Just and I know it doesn't change the outcome of anything like that, but just to think of, you know, there's people that, you know, I have to be reminded of it when it comes up. This is not something that is ingrained, you know.
Right.
Part of that's because I was young when it happened. But, you know, I do see that come up. Somebody puts a tweet or something out that says this is the anniversary of Joe Delaney's day there. And so I have to be reminded of it. But if it happened today, we would just all remember it because it would just be such a huge story that it would be ingrained in what we, it would be just as, you know, it'd be one of those big days that you always remembered or big stories you always remembered. You might forget the exact date, but you would always remember hearing about Delaney. And it's, you know, it's unfortunate it had to happen, but if it had to happen, kind of wish more people remembered Joe Delaney.
Yes, I think you make a very good point.
I want to say, since we're talking about it here, if you have ESPN Plus, just search Delaney on ESPN Plus. There's a 30 for 30 short. It's about 20 minutes, a little less than 20 minutes long, and it tells a great story, and you can actually, you know, see the picture, see who the guy was, and learn who he, it's a great short, ESPN 30 for 30. So if you have ESPN Plus, that's, you can watch that whenever you want. It's called Delaney. Search for it, you'll find it right away. I just did it a little bit ago to make sure it was still on there, and it is, and it's definitely worth your 20 minutes that you'll spend watching it for sure.
You know, I think the point you bring up, Jason, about the social media age is very interesting. So what would be an equivalent? Like, I just looked up an equivalent. What would be the equivalent of 2022, you know, 39 years later? So we're not, like, obviously, if it's a Patrick Mahomes type of person, that's going to be, like, everybody's going to remember that, okay? A superstar, whatever. But I was like, what about trying to find a young running back that's early in his career, that is a very good running back, and is just getting started? And the name that popped in my head, there was two, but this was the main one, and then I looked, and the numbers are somewhat eerily similar. The equivalent in today's social media society in regards to Joe Delaney back in 1983 doing what he did would be a Jonathan Taylor, the running back for the Indianapolis Colts.
That would be a good one.
He is 23. He ran for 1,169 yards his rookie year. He ran for 1,800 yards last year. If Jonathan Taylor was in the same situation in a social media age and jumped into a pond in Indianapolis or wherever it is, Indiana, and tried to save and do what Joe Delaney did, that would be a much bigger story, and it would be remembered a lot longer because of social media and because of just all the attention. And NFL is a much bigger animal now than it was, obviously, in 1983, all the coverage that you have and everything else. This was a national story, by the way, in 1983. But the staying power, I think, is what you're trying to say, is the social media part creates even more staying power. And so that would be, you know, an equivalent of Joe Delaney would be if Jonathan Taylor or maybe a Najee Harris, you know, with Pittsburgh, would do something like that early in their career and risk their life and then lose their life trying to save a couple 11-year-olds, three 11-year-olds in a pond that are that are going under.
And he, you know, he didn't have a choice of like, oh, you know, I'll just, do I call somebody real quick on my cell phone?
Yeah, he probably didn't have a cell, phone on him,
right,
I'm sure.
Right.
1983,
yeah,
he wouldn't have had
time.
A phone. Couldn't have dialed 911 and get help.
He just had to do what he thought was best, and, you know,
sacrificed his life.
It worked out for one boy, but unfortunately for Joe, it did not. And I mean, yeah, that's quite the deal. I do, you know, I'm glad that gets brought up because that would just be such a huge thing to. I mean, we hope we never have to deal with that again, but you know, that would be such a different. It'd just be presented so much different. Social media is what kind of, you know, was the what reminded me of it when it was on Twitter.
That's what happened for me too.
Yeah.
Without it, I would have not remembered.
Right.
Because I was alive, but I was too young to remember it.
Yeah.
You know. But if I had grown up at 7 years old and on phones and had a cell phone and social media, I probably would remember it. You know? But back then we didn't have any of that. So when you're thinking of heroes and sports heroes and courage, Joe Delaney should fit both of those labels. The newest College Hall of Fame class has been announced. That was yesterday. And, hey, there's some prominent people you may know that are going to be in this class. Former KU coach Roy Williams and Silver Lake native and one-time K-State coach and player Lon Kruger, part of the group of seven, voted into the College Basketball Hall of Fame. Williams retired with 903 wins, three national titles, all at North Carolina. Coach KU from 88 to 03 led them to four Final Fours and two national title appearances. Won 418 games in Lawrence. He won all three of his titles in Carolina. Won 485 games there from 03 to 2021. Lon Kruger, standout for Jack Hartman in the early 70s, winning a Big 8 Player of the Year. His last two seasons, from 1986 to 1990, he coached K-State to an 81-46 record and four NCAA tournament appearances. Of course, made the Elite Eight in 1988 before losing to KU up in Detroit at Pontiac Superdome or Silverdome. Kruger made the Final Four twice as a coach, once at Florida in 1994 and at Oklahoma in 2016. He won 674 games as a college coach. He also coached at Texas Pan American, Illinois, UNLV. And like Williams, Kruger retired in 2021 from college coaching. Others joining the College Basketball Hall of Fame, Richard Hamilton, John Beilein, Larry Miller, Frank Selvey, and Jerry Krause, who's no longer with us.
That's a different Jerry Krause, actually.
I
looked at his picture. I'm like, that dude's tall and bald.
I just was reading here, and I'm like, I didn't know Jerry Krause was involved in the college stuff side of it.
Because I thought the same thing when I saw Jerry Krause. I'm like, college, really? And then I saw a picture of him. I'm like, oh, okay.
Nominees will be inducted in November, likely during the Hall of Fame Classic at T-Mobile Center in Kansas City. So, well-deserved, and honestly, it's kind of surprised that, well, I guess Roy just got done, and so did Lon Kruger, but those guys are no-brainers.
Yeah, they'll both be.
Complete no-brainers.
Yeah, College Basketball Hall of Fame must be, you got to be retired. I haven't looked at the parameters or anything, because Roy's already in the Basketball Hall of Fame in Massachusetts, so, yeah.
A new commissioner for the Big 12. The Big 12 Conference announced their next commissioner, Brett Yormark. That's how you pronounce it?
Yeah, I believe so.
Was named the fifth commissioner of the Big 12, succeeding Bob Boolsby, who stepped away from the position in April. Yormark joins the Big 12 from Rock Nation, where he was the COO and co-CEO of Rock Nation Unified, which assists clients and careers in every aspect of modern entertainment. From 05 to 2019, he was the CEO of the Brooklyn Nets. Prior to the Nets, he was the vice president of corporate sponsorships for NASCAR. So he's been involved in a lot of different sports. Mm-hmm. He's got connections, that's for sure. Yormark said in a statement, "I'm here to listen, learn, find ways to add value, add resources, and try to help shine a light on the importance of college athletics. I look forward to leveraging my experience and network alongside our presidents, chancellors, and athletic directors to shape the future of the Big 12 brand and emphasize our collective strengths." Yormark is supposed to begin his new role as Big 12 commissioner on August 1st. You know, from what I've read in different things that people said, the Big 12 needed to think a little outside the box. And I think they definitely did here.
No, for sure.
And I'm going to say that I tend to like when you go outside the box. That's just kind of me. It's just, there's always the safe thing to do. And yeah, there's probably a little bit more risk because it's a little different. But the payoff can be really big. It's like, you know, it's like the NBA draft recently. Are you drafting on potential? Are you drafting on the safeness? And it seemed like the Magic went with Banchero's probably the safer NBA-ready guy, but Jabari Smith might end up being the best player in that draft. So they went with more of the safer pick. I think most people would say that Pablo was Banchero is the safer pick. But Smith might have more upset or Holmgren or whatever. Same thing with the Big 12. They could have gone with some guy that's been a commissioner somewhere else or got with a guy that was just tied to college athletics, but they went outside the box.
Even a lawyer type.
A lawyer,
type,
yeah.
Type person. Yeah.
Right.
Kind of go in the entertainment field, looks like a little bit more, and that leads you to think that maybe he'll be involved heavily in like TV and media rights and trying to get as big of one as he can possibly get for the conference. And
what do you think, Dustin?
Yeah, that's what he was doing. Actually, that's what he was doing with when he was with NASCAR, was really involved in the media part of it and getting TV deals, things like that. I like it.
I do, too.
You know, it's instead of being boring, you know, I don't say boring, but just status quo, right, of
blah,
going
blah,
after.
Blah, blah.
Let's go after, because Kirk Schultz was mentioned in it, right? He used to be the president at K-State, now he's at Washington State, and he was one of the guys mentioned as a possibility, and it's like, let's not do a president or an AD or anything like that. And they went somewhere different with it. So it's hard to understand and know exactly what this guy might bring to the table because of that, because he doesn't really have experience in this specifically, right, as far as college sports world is concerned. But he kind of, I would think, knows the ins and outs of business very well and can do those kind of things at a better ability, obviously, than Bob Boolsby probably, and those kind of things, right? Like this, so that you're going to have strengths, and you're probably going to have to learn some things too about the college aspect of it if you're the new guy. So, you know, that's going to happen no matter who takes the job. Even if you are ingrained in the college world, you're going to have to go learn the business side of it, right?
Sure.
And so this is a job that is very wide in the role that you play and the things that you have to know and understand about what big-time college sports is right now. It's not just about the college part of it. It's not just about the athletic part of it, sad to say anymore, right? It's about everything. It's about the money. It's about everything that is involved with that. And so I think it is smart to think outside the box and find a guy that understands business too, right?
Hell yeah.
That can do those things and not just focus on a president who, I did a good job fundraising at my university. Well, that don't matter when you're talking about big-time TV deals. So I like it. As long, I mean, you know, I don't know anything about him, but I like the direction they took.
I do too. We'll see how it works out. That's the new commission of the Big 12 going a different direction, and I kind of, like I said, I like thinking outside the box. NBA trades. Free agency begins officially tonight at 5 o'clock in the NBA. Yesterday, the Atlanta Hawks traded for Spurs All-Star guard DeJounte Murray. Spurs will get Danilo Gallinari, 3 future first-round picks and a pick swap. Also, reports are that Sixers star James Harden is declining his $47 million option in hopes of negotiating a new deal that would give Philadelphia more flexibility to build their roster. Although Harden's officially a free agent, many believe he'll stay with the Sixers in the end. Bradley Beal declining his option of $36 million, but he should get a max deal with the Wizards or somebody else. It sounds like he'll probably be with the Wizards. So those are a few things that are happening in the NBA so far. And there is a story on CBSSports.com. I'll pull that up here real quick. I forgot to bring it up here. Top 45 free agents available. Jalen Brunson's a guy that doesn't even start for the Mavericks usually. That's the Knicks are going after. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Knicks. I'm glad I'm not a Knicks fan. But here are the biggest names of free agency according to the story. Zach LaVine of the Bulls would probably be the biggest name out there. Of course, Harden is out there, but I don't think you want to pay him that much money. I mean, you know, I think the best thing ever happened for the Sixers would be that he doesn't re-sign with them. Yeah, I think James Harden, if he gets some kind of max deal, he could re-sign with the Sixers for up to $70 million over 5 years. But they say expect, however, a short-term non-max deal that gives him some security and gives both sides some flexibility. He'll want to capitalize if he bounces back to his pre-injury form, and the team will want to be protected if he doesn't. By taking a pay cut, he will give the front office more immediate financial flexibility so it can improve the roster around him. Well, okay, I don't know if Harden's going to be willing to do all that. But the worst thing the Sixers could do, or anybody, is give James Harden 5 years, $270 million. Mm-hmm. I will go out and say it would be one of the worst contracts in the history of sports.
Yeah, to go that long with him. I mean,
at his age already, he looks like he's declining. He doesn't look as interested. He doesn't look to be in as good shape. And you're going to invest that much money in a guy? That's why they're talking about maybe a short-term non-max deal.
Yeah, that's the direction I would go.
I would, too.
I'm not paying James Harden $270 over five.
Who really would?
You're darned if you do, darned if you don't. You know, there's nobody out there. You know, you can't go out and get a different free agent like Zach LaVine because that counts against your cap, which the Sixers wouldn't have that much to deal with. But, like, if you re-sign your own, you know, those don't count against your cap all the time. And so, you know, Harden's really the only way, you know, the upside of Harden, which I don't know if there's that much left, but the upside of Harden would be if he gets in shape and decides to be interested. I know those are big ifs lately, but
you shouldn't have to question that if you're going to give a guy a max contract.
Those are, if you have to question that, then you shouldn't be offering it.
Pay it. Yeah,
but if you don't do it and you can't get anybody else, there is no chance really to contend in the East. And so it's sad that that's the only chance you got. So I don't know. And I don't know if that's a good chance, but it's the only chance.
The other ones, they have your Miles Bridges of the Charlotte Hornets, who just got arrested.
Yeah, right. That max contract might have went bye-bye.
That's bad timing. DeAndre Ayton is one of the most intriguing free agents. If the Suns maxed him out now, it would cost him $177 million over 5 years. If they don't, he won't accept anything less, more than likely. There would be an offer sheet, and possibly he could have a sign and trade. Jalen Brunson, sounds like the Knicks are moving all kinds of stuff so they can sign a guy that was not even a starter most of the time, Mavericks, although really came on and played great in the playoffs. He is only, I think, 25 or 26. So maybe that's a great move for the Knicks if they can get him. We mentioned Bradley Beal, more than likely going to get a five-year term, $48 million deal with the Wizards for a max. Colin Sexton's a young kid that's done well in Cleveland. He, I guess there's a situation where he did tore his meniscus 11 games in the season. Anthony Simmons, Portland had a really good year. Free agent Tyus Jones with the Grizzlies. I mean, those are the most notable ones. Dusty, of course, knows.
You
Patty.
Got a list of 45, and that's you're already getting to this point. Right.
It's not a bunch of great players. I mean, yeah. They're good players, but Patty Mills, of course, you know, he's with Brooklyn. You know, on this list that they got, Dennis Schroeder, who is with the Rockets. What else we got here? Yeah, there's not. It's not a great. It's not great at all, to be honest with you. The best ones, well, Zach LaVine is the best one. There's no doubt. I think he's the best option out there for anybody. Maybe, you know, Knicks disagree and they go Jalen Brunson. But to me, LaVine would be the biggest one. And then Ayton. Those would be the two big ones. And after that, it falls off. And we're all expecting Beal to re-sign. So right. if he doesn't, he'd be a huge deal, of course. But let the money roll.
It's going to start coming up this evening.
Yep,
people are going to get paid more than what they deserve, more than likely, and
happens
Jalen
all the time.
Brunson's going to be at the top of that list, probably.
I would agree with you. Wimbledon, time for the All England Club update with Dusty, brought to you by...
Well, it's brought to you by Ye Olde Mitre, the oldest pub in London.
Nice. I like it.
I found that real quick.
I never heard of it.
I don't even know if I said it right, to be completely honest with you. Wimbledon yesterday, where things got rolling again. Novak Djokovic, a straight set win. Casper Ruud, who made it all the way to the French Open final, was beaten in four sets yesterday. He was the number three seed, so he's out. Also, Riley Opelka from the U.S., 15th seed, is out. Carlos Alcaraz advanced in three sets, and John Isner beat Great Britain's own Andy Murray in four sets. So Isner moves on to the third round. Women's side, actually three top 10 seeds were eliminated. Kontaveit from Greece, the number two seed, and then Muguruza, the number nine, and Emma Raducanu, who won the U.S. Open last year, was eliminated as well. 3, 5, and 6 are moving on. You guys don't know their names, so who cares?
That'll work. I like it. Who cares? This is coming from Josh Vernier, who covers the Royals, 610 Sports Kansas City, on Twitter. Royals owner John Sherman said, and I quote, "I'm supportive, but I'm also pushing for the right changes. Dayton and JJ are guys with great baseball histories, and I expect them to be the architects of change and getting us on the right track." So for all those that wanted the Royals a clean house, as we said all along, that's not going to happen. Freddie Freeman fired his agent yesterday. This is pretty interesting. The agent, the main guy with Excel, Casey Close, never told Freddie Freeman about the Braves' final offer.
Yeah.
That is not what an agent's supposed to do.
No.
And it sounds like if Freeman had known the final offer, he would have never left Atlanta.
Yeah.
So the agent caused Freeman all these problems.
Final offer's probably still lower than what the Dodgers gave him, but it's an offer that a guy will take because he wants to stay home.
It was out there yesterday, and it was 1 year less, but the average money was more, a little more per year, and then there was... I forgot there was something else tied to it that was actually slightly better, but it was like almost, it
probably
was basically pretty
almost,
much a wash is what it was. It was no big major difference at all.
Exactly.
Anyway, the agent Casey Close never told Freddie Freeman about the Braves' final offer. That's why Freeman fired him. He found out in Atlanta this weekend that the Braves had put that offer on the table.
Mm-hmm.
So think about this for a second. Freddie Freeman wins a World Series with the Atlanta Braves. He's been there his whole career, 12 years. Braves fans love him. Everybody loves him. He's a big part of the community. And he wants to be with the Braves, probably told his agent he'd like to be with the Braves if it all works out. And his agent then works out a deal with the Dodgers. And then they say, hey, we're taking this deal. And the Braves assume that the agent's telling Freddie about their final offer. Freddie's assuming that is the what he has been told by his agent, that's the best the Braves can do. And what he was told, obviously, was significantly different than what the Dodgers offer. So Freddie goes, okay, reluctantly, I guess I take the Dodgers deal. And then when that breaks down, of course, the Braves are trading for Matt Olson from the Oakland A's to replace Freddie Freeman. Freddie Freeman then comes back to Atlanta, tears in his eyes, crying as he's doing interviews before and after games because it's so emotional as the Dodgers are back in Atlanta. You can tell he's not really a Dodger. He's a Brave. He said, I love everybody, so forth, in these interviews on the field. And then he goes back to Atlanta for this series, and he finds out that somebody he talks to at the Braves says, why didn't you take our deal, man? You know, we thought it was really fairly close. You know, why didn't you? And Freddie's like, I didn't know that was your final offer. That's how it went down. Mm-hmm. He was talking to people in Atlanta, and Atlanta, they told him, dude, we did offer you this.
Yeah.
He's like, nobody told. My agent didn't tell me that.
It's obviously somebody he's talking to within the Braves organization.
Absolutely.
That he knew real well.
That he trusted.
Probably his whole time there, maybe. Who knows? But he trusts him and understands that this guy wouldn't lie to me about this.
But it also means you trust an agent. You know, this is one thing I've said. You got to be very careful who you hire as your agent representation because you want them to do the dirty work and they be the middleman and you don't have to deal with that stuff. But if you've been with the organization for so long and you know a few people, obviously higher up in the organization, like now he's talking to somebody that has privy to all this information. I guess, like, why couldn't Freddie Freeman have found out without the sake of his agent? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the one thing that like, young people are coming out of high school and going into college or college into the pros. They don't know anything, per se, about what these agents are like. There's lots of them that come after you.
Yeah.
And how do you know if the agents are shooting you straight? And you don't want to have to deal straight up with the owners as to negotiating this or a GM. But in a situation like this, Freddie Freeman's been with the Braves for a long time. He knows people in the front office. He's dealt with these people personally. I mean, they're celebrating on the field and hugging each other for crying out loud last year. And it is pretty amazing to me that you can, you know, if Freddie Freeman really wanted to be a Brave, you would think he would have been asking a lot of people, even going above his agent and saying, dude, now I want to talk to him. I mean, let me talk to him. And I don't know. Maybe that did happen. But bottom line is that he fired his agent. As the world turns, as the old soap opera was there. And I feel for Freddie Freeman a little bit, but at the same time, you're the one that hired your agency, an agent, and that's the guy that represented you, and you trusted him, and he let you down, clearly.
I have a hard time believing it happened this way. Like, not that I'm thinking anybody's lying or not telling the truth or anything like that. I just have a hard time believing that how did the agent not think that this was not going to get out somewhere, like that final offer wasn't going to be, we can't keep anything secret anymore.
Well, here's my thing: is the agent the deals weren't like drastically different. I mean, there's commission structure, whatever agents take, but it's not like they don't have other clients. This is not some one. Freddie Freeman's not the only client for this agency and for this agent, Casey Close. But it says, you know, that Casey Close knew that Freddie would have taken the Atlanta deal. That's why he didn't tell him the final offer. Right. So you're basically helping dictate where a guy goes and leaves where he's happy. For what? A million dollar commission?
Instead of a fourth year, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, how much more money did Close make off this deal by going with the Dodgers instead of the Braves' final deal? Yeah, he obviously made more money. There was something in it for him. But at the same time, that comes down to greed. That comes down to the greed of the agent and not caring about his client. That's what it comes down to.
He lost a hell of a lot of money by not telling him, by getting fired.
Well, that's what I'm going to say,
What are we going to do here
now? But as Jason said,
now?
He probably thought, obviously, now. I ain't going to get out, so I'm not going to worry about it. It's interesting stuff. It's just weird. You don't see that very often. And by the way, agents have done that before. Agents have not told their clients.
You're telling me there are shady business people out there that are agents?
Come on, man. Especially with young kids coming into the deal.
You ever watched Jerry Maguire, huh?
Yes. Show me the money! Another comment from Royals owner John Sherman. The disappointing part about this year is that I think we thought we were further along, and we're clearly not. We got to look hard in the mirror and think about how we get better. That's not just me, JJ, and Dayton. We're talking about that every day. Okay. So what do you take out of all of that?
It's like, we have faith, but we have to look in the mirror. Well,
is that the...
What's the look in the mirror part then?
Is that the real vote of confidence, or is that the dreaded vote of confidence where you say it out loud and then 6 weeks later don't mean it and make a change? I don't know. I don't think it'll do it in season, but, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think he's making any changes in any time.
Probably
soon.
Not. I'm just
no.
Yeah.
I would agree with you on
I'd
that.
I'd rather it be the dreaded vote of confidence, but at yes. this point, just to get something fresh and move on if you're going to be bad.
Right. Doug Gottlieb has this on Twitter. Want to speed up baseball? Why do pitchers warm up on the mound? They're already loose in the bullpen with a proper mound. Imagine if I'm hooping and I check in and I need a few warm-up shots before I play. You know what? That's a fair point. It's a fair point. Here's something that I don't understand about baseball. There's a few things I don't understand about baseball, and I coach baseball. I coach a lot of baseball, have over the years, and I try to tell kids, you don't need to take your max 5 or 8 warm-up pitches between every inning, whatever it is, if it's 5 or 8, depending on the level. Mm-hmm. You don't. If you're comfortable and you don't need any warm-up pitches, I mean, you don't need to take them. You don't have. There's no rule that says you have to take them. Why throw more pitches with your arm?
Yeah,
Just if you need to throw 2, then tell the catcher, second one, go down. That would speed up the game. Right there, that speeds up the game because the defense is ready. We've thrown 2 warm-up pitches instead of 8 or 5, and the second pitch, the catcher throws down to second, so the catcher got his extra warm-up throw to second, and the shortstop or second baseman takes the throw, and then boom, we're ready to play. That would speed up the game. Now, the part of it is this helps stall for commercial breaks in between innings and everything else.
I'd say it's a case-by-case basis because if you got a rookie making his MLB debut, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he warmed up on a real mound in the bullpen, but he doesn't understand that. Atmosphere around what's going on in the open.
Yeah.
If you have a bullpen that's in the outfield, which most people do now, I think there's only like four places that have still the mm-hmm. bullpen out the side of the baseline. Mm-hmm. But I think it would be a case by case. And if you understand the atmosphere and environment that you're in, like say the Royals, like, I mean, Josh Stalman, right? Like, why does he need to go out and throw warm up pitches to understand that part of it, right? Mm-hmm. I think that would be a little bit different because you actually do kind of want to understand where you're pitching and what it's going to be like. What are the conditions? You know, the weather, what's that like? Because, you know, your bullpen's not going to be out in the open like that, too. Just to get a feel for that, I think, is probably the only reason. The only thing that I would come back at Doug Gottlieb with would be, yeah, you're in the bullpen, but you're also enclosed in a place that is not tracking wind and all those different things. So maybe get a feel for what's going on out on the actual field
that
in the open too.
And the mounds are going to be just a touch different. They're going to be the same height and the same length and all that stuff. But the dirt is going to be a little bit different. It might be not as well
but
taken care of out in the bullpen.
Well, see, that's what I would do. I'm with Gottlieb on this that you probably don't need to do it, but I would split the difference. I'd say give him maybe 2 or 3 warm-up pitches.
And I don't even know how many majors get in between.
Well, how many do you think they get?
I was going to say like 6 maybe.
No, I've always known
it's 8.
I've always known it to be 8. Well, guess what? We're all going to learn something new today. I always thought it was 8.
Oh, yeah. Huh.
It was 8. But it says, prior to 2018, pitchers were granted up to eight warm-up pitchers under typical circumstances that didn't include an injury or another emergency situation. Prior to 2018, 4 years ago, this changed. I did not know that until right now. The answer to the question is, it's unlimited. When taking their position at the beginning of an inning or when relieving another pitcher, pitchers are permitted to throw as many warm-up pitches as they want within the countdown parameters set forth by Major League Baseball. The time between innings and pitching changes is 2 minutes and 5 seconds for local broadcast, 2 minutes 25 seconds for nationally televised games, and 2 minutes 55 seconds for tiebreaker and postseason games. The umpire's signal for the final warm-up pitch comes at the 25-second mark, and the pitcher must throw it before the clock hits 20. The batter will be announced at the 20-second mark, and the pitcher must begin his windup to throw the first pitch of the inning within the 5 seconds before the clock hits 0. So, if it's local, national, or it's a postseason game, there's 3 different amounts of time. So you technically can throw maybe 8 warm-up pitches if it's a local broadcast, 9 if it's a national, and 10 or 11 if it's a postseason. So the correct answer, ladies and gentlemen, we have just educated. I've just blown my own mind by coming up with this. I didn't come up with it. I found it. I always thought it was 8, and it was 8. But for 4 years, I've thought it's 8. But technically, it's unlimited. If a pitcher wants to go up there and just speed pitch, he could throw 20. Or he can just go out there and he could throw 1 and say, I'm done, and wait 2 minutes standing on the hill until they're ready to come back from TV. So that usually means what? They're going to stay loose, and they're going to go ahead and throw the nice, easy warm-up tosses.
Yeah.
But for younger kids, I don't think you have to overdo it. But I think it was five that we had when we were doing younger ball and K18 and all that. I think it was five. But that's interesting. If somebody threw that trivia question out there, a lot of people would have failed, and I would have too.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest oversights in pace of play and the fact that we complain about college football games going 4 hours sometimes and baseball games lasting 3.5, you know, between the Red Sox and Yankees, and part of that is strategy and the way
tons
the,
of pitching
the managing
changes.
Goes and the pitching changes. But what people don't talk about and understand is the media side of it.
Mm-hmm.
We got to play commercials to get our money coming in, right? And so I think there's people that don't quite get that part of it. They're like, let's speed up pace of play. Well, yeah, we're trying to speed up pace of play, but we're still taking 2 minutes and 20 seconds for a pitching change or whatever you said it was, right?
Right.
And so that's just automatic. Like, you go to break for a pitching change, and you can't do anything about that. The clock starts, sure, but you can't speed that up any more than you already have because TV wants to take it.
Yeah.
And that's the way college football is. So, yeah, how many times – like – back in the day, there was not commercial breaks after punts.
Right.
Like, you just go out there and play. But some of these times, now you got commercial break after a punt changes field position.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, I get it on a kickoff after a touchdown, but I don't think we need to be leaving after a punt. Let's keep rolling.
Yeah, that's always the fun part. Like, you go to commercial break, come back, and one thing, yeah, there's the kickoff or whatever it might be, and then boom, we go back to break again. Of course, in college basketball, you have the timeout. The coach takes timeout 10 seconds before the media timeout.
Yeah.
Come back, we have one possession, maybe not even a shot, turnover, whatever, a foul, boom, we go to another TV break because we got the media timeout.
Yeah.
There's ways to speed up the games. There's no doubt about it. But you also got to maximize your commercial inventory. And so...
And listen, I'm not saying I don't understand that part of it. Obviously, we do, right? We want to get as many breaks as we can during a basketball or football game to play our spots, too, right? Like, I understand why they're doing it and what it is in our business. But there's a lot of people that don't quite probably understand that that's part of the game.
Yeah.
If you're not actually in it, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just don't care about that part. All they care about is for this guy holding the dang sign with his red vest on at the football game to get off my dang field. I want to watch football.
Well, yeah,
that's all people care about.
Well, you're at the game. It seems like it takes forever.
It does.
Like, are we going to ever play again?
Is this break over yet?
Yeah, exactly. See, I'm looking at Baseball Rules Academy. It's not to exceed 8 warm-up pitches. Trying to see here, high school baseball. Some of it is like it's a time limit, so some of it actually isn't exactly a set amount
set
either.
Number, yeah.
So, kind of, there's different rules, different things. I've learned that over baseball, even with the team we got now. It's like every tournament's got their own rules, which is annoying. But yeah, we're doing it this way. We're doing it that way. Oh, you can steal this tournament. You can't steal this tournament. It's like, how about we just have uniform rules across the board, make it consistent, better for everybody. The umps, the players, the coaches, the fans. That'd be the easiest thing to do, but. We wouldn't want to keep it simple, stupid. We'd like
Never.
To keep it complicated. Once again, if you think about true courage, you want to think about an actual hero that happened to be an athlete. There's not many that fit that criteria of all those boxes I just said. Joe Delaney does. And it was 39 years ago yesterday that he gave up his life to save 3 young boys.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.